Welcome to Stories of Hope. My name's Bryce Davies, a Salvation Army officer based in Brisbane. My guest on the podcast today is Nuri Gonsalves. Now, did I say that right, Nuri?
It's Nuria Gonsalves.
Not even close. Nuria Gonsalves. Fantastic name. And Nuria is the culturally and linguistically diverse community engagement lead nationally for the Salvation Army and is based in Sydney. Now, I met Nuri at a conference and we immediately hit it off as she's simply delightful and has an infectious enthusiasm and passion for people. She's actively nurturing the many wonderful possibilities for the Salvos to be effective in supporting people from diverse cultural backgrounds and is full of ideas and energy. Here's something interesting. She's married to Rodney, whose father was a big cricket fan and loved Rodney Marsh, who happens to have been my childhood hero too, because he was a fat wicketkeeper, and that was exactly who I was, and loved to slog the ball all over the ground and made a quick 20 and didn't bother too much with staying in for long periods of time. So I love Rodney Marsh, and Nuri's husband is named Rodney after Rodney Marsh, so go figure that. Nuri has two daughters, Riona and Roshona, and has lived in Australia for over 19 years. I'm really looking forward to our chat, and I'm sure it'll be an interesting one. So welcome to the podcast, Nuri. Great to have you here.
Thank you, Bryce. Truly appreciate this opportunity.
Tell me about your childhood and where you were born and what your mum and dad did for a living.
Sure. I was born in this beautiful town called Vasai in Mumbai. And growing up in a Catholic family, it was a time, you know, when life revolved around Christ, and every corner of our town seemed to tell a story of faith, family, and the beauty of a simple childhood. So let me tell you a bit about Vasai. So Vasai is a town where we have a large Christian community, and we do have 26 parishes. And I grew up in this parish called Gokivare. So I can still picture, you know, as I speak, waking up to the sound of church bells echoing through quiet streets of our beautiful village called Gokivare. The air was always filled with a sense of tranquility. And as we prepared for the day, our morning mostly began with by attending church mass. You know, so whenever it was possible to go to church early in the morning before we start our day, we would, and we were encouraged to do so.
Wow, that's not the image I have of India. I kind of have this sort of not tranquil. I kind of have busy street. I guess I've seen the best exotic marigold hotel, and it's kind of like tuk-tuks everywhere, and it's crazy. But you're painting a very different picture, and certainly a very strong Christian culture there too, which was not what I was expecting. Was that quite unique in that part of the world to have that upbringing?
Yes, because we did have, as you would have heard about, some Portuguese rule back then, you know, and then we had these rulers in Goa as well as Vasai, which is part of Mumbai. And that's why we do have many churches around, and we grandfathers were Hindus and came to faith then.
Okay. And what did your mum and dad do for a living?
So my mom was a school teacher, and this was the school in our village. It was called St. Anthony's, and then later named as Vidya Vikasini English High School. So that's a very Indian name. My father worked for Air India, and, you know, we did get opportunity to go around the world because, you know, could get some tickets to travel.
Yeah. And did you have brothers and sisters?
Yes, I do. I'm the eldest in the family, and I do have a younger brother. His name is Joy, and my younger sister, Neha.
Right. Your brother's name is Joy.
Yes. And that's, I know what you're thinking now, but that's very common in India.
Yeah. Beautiful. Sounds like the village was quite small, was it, if it had a school, or was it a big village? Like, how many people lived in your village, would you say?
As far as I remember, 200 families or more in that village. And we did have a school, which was built by missionaries called Franciscan Brothers.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it sounds like church and school life was in that village for you up until your teenage years? Or, like, is that where you spent your childhood?
Yes, definitely. So this town, it was just a tight-knit community where I grew up. Mm. Everyone knew each other. Our lives were intertwined with church calendar, Sundays filled with mass, choir practice, youth groups, St. Vincent de Paul meetings, you know, community gatherings like weddings and holy communions.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and family was just not a part of the congregation. It was larger family bound by faith.
Yeah, wow. So tell me about your personality. Like, what sort of a kid were you? Are you outgoing or shy?
I've been an outgoing person all my life, and I just had this boundless energy, and I believe I still do. I embraced life with open arms, eagerly diving into every opportunity, Bryce, that came my way. So be it sports, be it dancing, singing, comparing stage shows, or just, you know, being a part of church, teaching younger kids catechism or reading at church, being part of youth groups, with visiting home for the aged, debating competitions, elocution, name it, cooking, love taking on challenges, you know, and then enthusiasm defined my approach to life.
Yeah. Curious, what sports did you play?
I used to take part in running. Well, I was very good at relay. I did play throwball and badminton.
But you didn't take up cricket by the sounds of it.
I did play cricket, actually. Of course. And I use my both hands just so that you know, so I can be left-handed and right-handed as well.
Wow.
So
which
is ambidextrous.
Fantastic. Yeah. So as a teenager, did you stay on the rail? Like, did you rebel at all? Like, a lot of teenagers sort of kick against the goads a bit. Did you find yourself like that, or were you fairly compliant?
No, I was fairly compliant. I was pretty, you know, I was always been a good girl as far as I remember. And, you know, I would love to listen and follow whatever your parents say. Even in school, I was one of the favorites of my teachers as well.
Oh, there you go. So what happened after that? Like, did you stay in the village into your 20s, and did you go to university or anything? What happened after schooling?
Yes, I did go to university, but again, that was still in the same town, Vassai, and Mumbai University, so it was not too far. After that, I did my bachelor's in education as well, and pretty much worked for 1 year, taught in a school, and then got married. So most of my life, I was there till the age of 23, and then after that, in Australia.
So how did you meet your husband?
Well, it's an arranged marriage, Bryce. So, you know, back in India, we do have arranged marriages, as you must be aware of. Yeah. But it is within our community, and Ronnie was introduced. So he met my father when he was coming to Australia, and that's how that connection began. And yeah, after we did talk to each other for a few months, and then finally, decided to get married.
Wow. So that's a really different culture to Australia, and yet, honestly, do you have any clue what you're doing when you get married? I reckon it's not a bad idea when I really think about it. Yeah, and truthfully, I think my mum and Sue's mum kind of collaborated to get us together too. So without the formalities of arranged marriage, I think we were kind of corralled together in a beautiful sort of a way, would you believe?
But it worked, right? So
absolutely. How long have you been married?
It's been 19 years. It will be 20 in May, coming May.
Well, congratulations. That's a great effort.
Thank you, Bryce.
So you met Rodney, and what does Rodney do for a living?
Well, Rodney is an engineer, and he does speech analytics, cyber intelligence.
Oh, okay.
Setting, call centers and things like that, yeah.
Okay. And came to Australia. What's that story?
Well, Rodney did. He was offered a job, actually, in Australia, and this is in 2003. Yeah. And that's when he met my father at the airport. And, in 2004, I get married to Rodney. It was literally.
So did you get married in India, or did you get married in Australia?
In India. So he came down, you know, where we met. He came down for his sister's wedding. After that, we met and we got married in 6 months' time.
So did Rodney live in Australia?
No. He came to Australia in 2003 for a job. When he was offered a job by, and then...
I see. And then came back to India to marry you.
Yes, that's correct.
I see. No, I understand now. Excellent. And so got married to you and dragged you back to Australia. What was that like for you?
After getting married, I think we got married in May. In a month's time, I was here because his company was kind enough to, you know, sponsor my visa, so which was really fortunate. But it was, you know, as it is, total culture shock. very new to the country.
What was that like? I mean, that's a big part of your work now. I'd really like to understand what were the challenges. And like, I'm curious, when you arrived, what airport did you arrive in?
Yeah, I arrived at Sydney Airport. So we have always been in Sydney.
Right.
Yep.
And you had a house to go to, is that right?
Yes. Ronnie was renting a beautiful unit and we were in Marsfield. So that was a really, really lovely place, if you know. Remember those beautiful memories we had there. You know what? I was no different to any other community member who have faced various challenges associated with adjusting to a new country or culture and lifestyle. But some of the challenges I have encountered was mainly, you know, adapting to a new culture. You know, it has been a challenge. There are differences in customs, social norms, communication style, which did require a lot of time and effort to understand and integrate into daily life.
Can you give me an example of that? Like, what would you say is the different communication style? Like, are we Aussies much more blunt or are we poke fun at people? Or like, what are the differences?
With the accent, it's so hard to understand for a newcomer. And now that we are so much exposed via media and TV and all, I think people who are migrating now would have a better understanding. But back then, it was hard just even understanding the local dialect because you speak fast in English and sometimes you can miss out on the words and it's hard to understand. The vocabulary is quite different. So even though we speak English, like I mean, we come from English medium schools, but that's not our first language and it does pose significant challenges, as I say. You know, it affects the communication. It makes it difficult to navigate various aspects of daily life, like interacting with authorities or seeking employment or accessing services.
Yeah. And in social gatherings, was it challenging there too, just to kind of know, like even the Aussie sense of humour is a bit unique, I would imagine?
Oh, yes, very much, you know. And I could share an example. When I was working with Salvation Army and when people would use slangs, I would have no idea. And initially, I was like, why are people just saying no worries? You know, like, I'm not worried and I would have no clue.
The other one is see you later and you kind of think, oh, when? When are we catching up again? It's not see you later. It's just goodbye. Yes.
That's right. And one of the colleagues were like, you know, they would crack jokes and I would have simply no understanding. I would like try to be a part of them and laugh. And it was like, Nuria, what was it? Did you understand? And I would have no answer. And they were like, oh my God, you're so innocent. Your parents kept you in a cocoon. It's like,
okay, yeah. You must have made some friends somehow. And did you do that primarily in amongst Indian people or did you find ways to break into more Anglo-Australian culture?
Look, as I said, my personality is very outgoing and, you know, I was never... I had never had the fear of just, you know, going, approaching someone and saying hello. And I did, as when I came in first, and Rodney used to go to work. So what I did was every morning walk to the church, which is a walking distance from where we lived in Marsfield, St. Anthony's Church, attend the mass. And then most of the time you would have all these women who were retired and were attending church. And then I made friends with them. So I did make friends with different cultural groups. So there was this lovely woman called Yvonne from Sri Lanka and she became a friend of mine. And then there were a few other ladies. So some were Italian, there was a Vietnamese woman there and it was really good. So they all were loving. They used to come and talk to me and, you know, that was a time I was just trying to, not even looking for work, just wanting to get adjusted and learn and understand more about living in Australia. So yeah, it was a good experience. No family, no friends, you know, everything new. So it did involve, feeling of isolation and loneliness at times.
Yeah, and things like just not knowing where to go, you're living in a different city, the traffic's probably different, all the signs are different.
Yes, absolutely. So even, you know, as you're saying, the transportation, you know, just adjusting to a new transportation system and understanding how to navigate the city was also a challenge, you know. Then obtaining driver's license, I had learned to drive in India, but driving here was different. And just understanding the local traffic regulations, accessing healthcare, everything was so new. Everything was new, but over time, you know, I've overcome these challenges and I'm feeling very proud of that.
Yeah, good. And through this time, you started to have children. Tell me about that journey for you.
Yes, so we were married in 2004 and our beautiful daughter Riona, she came into our lives in 2007. And then Rishona was born 2011. Yeah, and it's a beautiful moment, a life-changing moment. Coming into motherhood is so different, but it does have its own challenges as you don't have much support. So my mom and my parents-in-law took turns to come and support us as the kids were growing up. So that was really beautiful. And I do appreciate that a lot. And you know what? Sometimes we just take parents for granted because we don't realize how important it is. And when they are with you and back home, it's very common that your parents are, we live together, we live with our parents. Yeah. And, you know, when you go to work, they take care of the kids, you know, and they grow up them with them. But yeah, when you are away, that's when you realize how important it is, you know, and they giving all their time for us and helping us with this journey. I'm just grateful for all what they have done.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess that opened up a whole social world as well when they went to school and you met other mums and you became part of the school communities.
Yes, that's right. So Riona, she went to St. Anthony's School, which was next to our church where we lived in Marsfield. But then eventually we moved. So we moved to Hornsby. And that's when she was going to high school. We had to take this decision. And Riona was part of a school in Hornsby.
Yeah. And through this time, are you a school teacher? What's your professional life looking like?
So when I first moved to Australia, Bryce, I was a teacher. From back home with a strong background in mathematics. And it was an exciting but challenging time as I was new to the country and trying to navigate things slowly. So it was only me and my husband, as you know, had no family, no relatives in here. I had to go through a process of assessing my qualifications. And, you know, it was during this period that I started exploring alternative roles because qualification assessment took quite a while. And the landscape was different. Then I found myself at crossroads. However, when I began working with the Salvation Army, something just clicked. I had the option to go back to teaching, to the familiar world of classrooms and textbooks because my qualifications were assessed and back. But as I immersed myself in the work with the Salvos, I found a sense of purpose and fulfillment that I hadn't experienced before. And the impact we were making on people's lives, it was tangible. And I felt a deep connection to the community we were serving. So
how did that happen? Like, were you teaching at all through those years? Like, you've been in Australia 19 years. How long were you teaching and when did you join the Salvos?
So I did teach a very, like, just did a casual teaching role initially, but was very brief. And I was working with Meadowbank TAFE in the meantime, and I had applied for this role with Salvation Army Employment Plus. This was in 2006. After that, then I applied and I got into Salvation Army Employment Plus at Ryde. And after that, there was no looking back.
So how long did you work for Employment Plus?
Yes, so with Employment Plus, I did start in 2006 and then 2007, Riona was born. So I had to go on my maternity leave, took a break. Yeah. And then I was back again in 2009. And and after that, I think I have never looked back. And you might wonder why this shift, right, from teaching to working with the Salvation Army. Why would I have chosen this path? And you know what, Bryce? The answer lies in that profound sense of meaning added to my life. Because in teaching, I was shaping young minds and I would have done that through education, which was rewarding. However, the work with the Salvation Army allowed me to touch lives in more immediate and personal way. I was part of a team that was making a difference. You know, we were addressing real world challenges that many people face every day. So whether it was providing assistance with employment or assisting community members undergoing trauma, depression, addiction, language barriers, community members who are trying to integrate into the Australian culture or contributing to community development, every action I took, I just felt like a step forward towards positive change.
Yeah.
And this decision wasn't just about career. It was about aligning my values with everyday actions.
Yeah.
So it just became a calling.
Wonderful. Were you working with Greg Whitaker at that time? Was he part of the ride team at that stage?
Yes, yes. Greg was. So I was working with Employment Plus and Greg was with the course. Yes, I had great connections with Greg and he used to visit the site. Yes, definitely.
No, well, that would get you inspired about mission, wouldn't it? He's a terrific fella.
Yes, and that's where it all started, you know. That's when I started noticing, and initially I didn't know more about the course, but slowly as I started learning, I'm finding out, and that's where we were starting to refer some clients who needed help more than employment. And yeah. Similarly, when I was in Hornsby, I got transferred to Hornsby when we moved to Hornsby, and I did start working with Sean and Lydia, who are the core officers at Hornsby.
Yes.
And yes, and this connection began from there.
Yeah. So all those years in Employment Plus, and you find yourself in a quite different role these days. Tell me about that journey.
Yes. So with Employment Plus, you know, we always have to go through this tender every few years. And last year, when we had to go through this change, and you know, I thought, well, I have been with this organization and especially with E-Plus for such a long time, maybe I should look into something else. And that's when I went to look for our internal vacancies and I came across this role. And I thought, wow, this is me. I can see myself doing this. I'm so passionate about the community, passionate about helping others. You know, that has always been part of me. And I have worked enough with different cultures, you know, for more than 13 years now, that I had this knowledge which I could apply and get into this role and make a positive impact.
So tell me about the role that you have and what do you actually do and what's important in this role for you?
So with the current role being National Lead for Call Community Engagement, Rice, my role is to mainly work with our core officers. And it is mainly to support and develop the capacity of solvers to effectively engage with call communities. So I've been coming up with some resources which can assist cores all over the country who are wanting to make an impact and engage with these communities effectively. We have had beautiful events, and recently we had this event called Many Cultures, One Hope in Hurstville, which had a terrific response with 600 community members being a part of it.
Wow.
And these are all from call background. So it was really good. And yeah, the core themselves got motivated. They took up this challenge and yeah, they are having a big plan for engagement with these communities for next year as well. So yes, it is a different role, but I always say that I want in few years time every household to know who Salvation Army is, and that's what I want to work for, and you know, have my plans in that direction.
Wonderful. No, it's been an incredibly rich part of my journey to have had some seasons when I've really come alongside Syrian people was my experience, and the culture and the richness of their history and the way they fed me, truthfully, was just spectacular. So it's a wonderful
thing.
That's
right. Yes, you'll never go wrong with food, with especially with cultures.
Yeah, they can teach us how to do hospitality.
Yes, that's true.
So, Nuri, would you say there was a defining moment in your life, something that really shaped you or knocked you?
We do have many defining moments, you know, like be it your career where you have come up with some degrees and achievements and awards, and I have, you know, received quite a few in that space academically. At the same time, becoming a parent, you know, that is a defining moment. And being a part of an adventurous journey, which was definitely defining, where recently we went to Melbourne as a team, and the team event was, you know, doing treetops. You would be aware of that, treetops. Mm-hmm. And I am not a fan of heights, and I would have never done it myself ever. Mm. But my team did encourage me, and I finally, you know, went through all of those. It was beautiful, beautiful. So great experience.
Yeah.
But I would like to share an experience with you, Bryce, which was dacoiting, which took place at our house in Mumbai. Sorry, in this town called Gokhivre, where we lived. Like, have you heard about dacoiting?
Yeah, no, I've never heard of that term. What is that?
So this is where a gang of robbers come and attack your house in the night. And it was happening a lot those days. Maybe poverty could be a reason, but we were very little. I was only around 8 years old then. So this was in 1980s, late 80s. And my father was just back from Singapore. He went for work and he returned. And it was the night of my birthday. So it was 12th August, midnight he returned. And the next day was my birthday. So obviously I was looking forward to some presents and, you know, some chocolates and things like that. And mom and dad, you know, they go off to bed. And we as kids, like we were three brothers and sisters. So mom, because dad was away, we slept with her that night. And the previous 2-3 nights we were with her. And then we had our grandpa in one of the rooms. And one of my aunt was unmarried and she lived with us. Now, we all are in the bed. And all of a sudden, 1:30 a.m. in the night, you know, you have these big stones at your door. Those doors open, like, you know, they're just wide open.
Crashed open, yeah.
And mom and dad immediately wakes up and they know something is not right. Mom closed the bedroom door and she just picked us up from sleep and just put us under the bed. And I was awake and my younger brother and sister, and she just said, hold them and don't make any noise and hold their mouth. So I was holding my hand on their mouth, both of them. This robbers then opened the door of our bedroom and our lights were off. So mind you, just electricity was cut off. So this was pretty much, I don't know if it was planned. And it was monsoon season, so it rains heavily in August, June, July, August in India. And then these robbers, they climb the bed and they start hitting my father with they have these big sticks, wooden sticks on his head. And she's standing in the corner. I think they would have not seen her because it's dark. She escapes. And we had three doors to our house. So she just runs to the back door. And it's a very terrifying, I mean, I can still think of it, I get pins and needles all over. It's a terrifying experience. And I wouldn't wish for upon anyone, you know, and just fear gripped us. And I think being so little, I would have no idea, you know, what's happening, what's going on. But mom was very strong and she had a strong faith. So it became a time of deep introspection and reliance on Christ at that moment. She was just saying constantly, I can still remember, Christ help me, guide me, you know. And in the midst of the chaos, like she goes to the back door, opens the back door, she said. And she said something incredible happened to her. She jumped in the paddy fields just wanting to go to the neighbors to seek for help. And it felt like a divine presence, she was saying, a force that would have intervened to protect us. And she rushed to the neighbors for help and she was seeking and crying for help in her loudest voice ever. And as she ran through the back door, some of the robbers, they saw her and they followed her. But by the time she had reached one of the neighbors who had opened their doors, so the robbers sort of thought, oh, well, you know, now that she's going to get people. And she was so loud that few houses could hear her voice. And one of the families was awake because someone was unwell. And that family member just ran to the church and rang the church bells in the middle of the night. So this is 2 a.m. in the morning. And the church bells go off and the whole town sort of, you know, they wake up and like, what's happening? Yeah. People would be wondering. Exactly. Everyone just rushed to the church and we are not too far from the church. And people then came running to our place and these robbers would have thought, oh, well, this is not right. We need to run. They all disappeared. But there would be at least 16, 17 of them in one uniform. They had oil all over their bodies, apparently, mom said, you know, so that mom tried holding someone when she was escaping and they just slip off your hand because they put oil on their bodies. So this is what used to happen. And yeah, and, you know, then my dad was all dripped in blood. My aunt was in one of her bedrooms. They had hit her hard and pulled her earrings, gold earrings. So, you know, one of her ears was cut off. And my grandpa was in another room. They didn't do anything to him. They had locked him from outside. But with the shock, he passed away in 2 days.
My
dad had around 23 stitches on his head, and similarly, aunt, they were in the hospital, so they could not even be there to see their father at his funeral. So it is really the most terrifying experience for our family. But it was a turning point for our family. It deepened our connection to our faith in ways we hadn't imagined. Taught us resilience, the importance of, you know, forgiveness. Because, you know, after this, we had police, and, you know, for many months, this police kept coming, because never was such an incident ever happened in that town. So this was the first time. Wow. So no one knew and had experience. So they used to take us a couple of times. They had taken us to the jail and said, "How would you be able to recognize?" And then my mom and dad says, "We didn't want to, you know, take our kids, because it's very traumatic." And they said, "We just want to forgive." And the power of unwavering faith in face of adversity, our faith became pillar of strength.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So as you think about that experience, and I guess you bring that with you into your life and into your own family, has it impacted you, do you think?
Oh, yes, 100%. Look, no matter what challenges come our way, through our faith, you know, we can overcome even the darkest moments in life. And it is a lesson in gratitude.
Sure. I finish all my interviews with this question. What would you say to your 15-year-old self if you could speak into her life with what you know today?
With my 15-year-old self, I will say, be brave, be fearless. You know, you're not alone. And this is one of the passages from Joshua in the Bible. And my mom has always said to us, you know, always be fearless, brave, be courageous, because the Lord is with you. You know, embrace any imperfections. So life is full of ups and downs, you know, and we don't have to be too hard. So embrace your mistakes, and opportunities will come along and allow you to learn and grow.
Yeah. Well, it's been lovely to chat to you. And I'm so glad that you found your way to stay with the Salvation Army and do the work that you're doing. I think it's a vital work. And more, as Australia becomes more and more culturally diverse, we need to, in the church, make sure we don't just have white Anglo people sitting in our churches. We have all sorts of cultures and all sorts of languages flourishing within our communities. And it's so wonderful that you get to be a part of that and to throw your considerable enthusiasm and zest for life into that purpose. It's a wonderful blessing to the Salvation Army.
Thank you so much, Bryce. And yes, as you said, you know, we want to see more diversity, and that's our effort as a team as well, moving from monocultural to intercultural and embracing this beautiful cultures, because we all are children of the same God. And, you know, the Salvation Army is a church of all nations, as we all know. So, yeah.
I'm so glad that I don't just get to eat the pie and sauce, and I can have a good hot curry and a good vindaloo and all the wonderful parts of the culinary experience that I have these days. Because Indian food would be one of my favourites. So glad that Australia's diversified in that way, for sure.
So next time you are in Sydney, please do come over, and I'm sure I'll be able to make some yummy butter chicken for you.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. Butter chicken's my favourite. So lovely. God bless you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bryce. God bless you too.